This is a Carlisle ValueCast, brought to you by the Carlisle Group. ValueCast brings you insights from our One Carlisle Network, providing analysis, data, and observations to help you navigate the global economy and top-of-mind issues in news. The Carlisle Group. Invest wisely. Create value.
Welcome to ValueCast. This is David Marchik, Head of External Affairs at Carlisle. I'm here today with Marco De Benedetti and Gregor Bohm, co-heads of our European buyout business. Also with us today is Jason Thomas, Carlisle's Director of Research. Today we're discussing the opportunities and challenges for investing in Europe. Let's get started. First, Marco, all the news about Europe seems to be bad, negative. Things are dreary. What are you seeing on the ground? Has Europe bottomed out?
We have seen, surprisingly so, a pretty good resilience from our portfolio company. We clearly were pretty worried 12, 18 months ago on what the impact of the macro environment was going to be on our companies. And I think with the strategic decision we've taken, and so it's probably a biased subset, but we're very happy because most of our portfolio companies in 2012 showed positive growth in terms of earnings. Now, clearly the environment is challenging, but it is also true that in those environments, often the stronger companies actually are winning market share. So we are seeing actually the relative position of our companies even getting better.
So Jason, from a macro perspective, and Gregor, from a micro perspective, seems the last 2 years we just lurched from crisis to crisis, summit to summit, problem to problem. Is the crisis in Europe over?
Well, the way that I think about the problems that the euro area has undergone over the past several years, I think of as actually three separate but related crises that are each in different stages of resolution. The first and clearly most talked about is a sovereign funding crisis. This is both related to overly indebted central governments, but also a questions about a lender of last resort facility. If one simply looks at the public finance statistics, it's not as though the United States is in such better shape than, say, Italy. But because you have a Federal Reserve that is standing behind, ready and willing to buy U.S. Treasury obligations, they're perceived as credit risk-free. The same is, of course, true for U.K. gilts market and the Bank of England. So I think that this issue with the ECB's announcement of outright monetary transactions in September, they made clear that the ECB is willing to provide a similar backstop. And since that time, the yields on the securities issued by Italy and Spain have fallen considerably, are now consistent with long-term solvency, continued market access. The second issue is a balance of payments crisis. There was a time when people had genuine fears, corporate treasurers, depositors, others had genuine fears of currency disunion, thinking that a euro on deposit in a German bank was worth more than a euro on deposit in a Spanish bank. Again, the ECB has stepped in. The sorts of fund flows that you saw, fund outflows from the so-called periphery, have been halted. The flows into Germany have actually been net negative over the past several months, suggesting that there's actually fund flows back from out of Germany into the periphery since June or July of this year. So that also looks to be resolved to a large degree. Finally, the last aspect that is at the earliest stage of resolution is the banking crisis. And that is a problem with the 58 largest banks in Europe and the banking system more generally. And, you know, from 2007 to 2012, the accounting values of bank equity increased by 35%. At the same time as the market value of those banks' equity declined by 53%. The obvious implication there is that market participants did not believe that banks were accurately accounting for the value of their assets. And that led to a credit crunch, the banks trying to conserve capital, and that is starving of credit for non-financial private sector businesses. Bank equity has rebounded since May of last year. The ECB is now being installed as a regulator of regulators, getting a supervisory capacity over the banking system. That's going to improve transparency. It's going to improve confidence in bank accounting. But I think that that is the last element of the crisis, where if we continue to see improvement and we continue to see credit flowing, or we begin to see credit flowing to the private sector, where you can sort of feel as though the crisis is behind us.
Gregor, you're taking what Jason said, when you talk to the CEOs in your portfolio? Are they more optimistic? Do they feel like the crisis is behind them?
It depends on the sector. For example, if you're in healthcare, you don't see a crisis. Regulation pretty stable, and we are virtually unaffected from the crisis. In the industrial sector, that's slightly different. I think there you see a tightening of the inventories, and that leads to lower sales. But I'd like to get back to one of the points you were making earlier. We've seen in the last 6 years very choppy market, and the GDP growth in the 27 EU countries from 2006 to 2011 has been virtually zero on an average basis. So obviously 2006, the economy grew, the GDP grew, but you saw then some big contraction in 2009. So for the last 6 years, we have seen virtually zero growth. Despite that fact, we've been able to grow the EBITDA of our portfolio companies on average by 13% per year. So despite the fact that macro is very difficult, we have seen very strong EBITDA growth in our portfolio companies. And Marco mentioned a couple of things, what we do to help the company grow. So the macro environment might be difficult, but you can still do good deals.
And Jason, you track data across Carlyle's 220 companies. What are you seeing from our European data, and what does that say about where we are in the European economic cycle?
Right now, the best way to describe our data are the classic signs of bottoming out. And what you look for when you're looking for an economy bottoming out, it's that when you see the year-over-year declines higher than the annualized month-over-month declines. What that implies is that an inflection point has been reached and the rate of decline has moderated. At current trends, one would anticipate the European economy returning to growth in the second or third quarter of this year. Those are the projections also from the IMF, the OECD. Now, I want to have a cautionary note. We're not entirely sure how rapid that growth would be, and I think that one is deluding themselves if they anticipate, you know, really rapid resumption of growth later this year. But again, the trend lines are very positive that the actual contraction is coming to a close.
Gregor, Marco says things are relatively flat. Jason says things may be bottoming out and are poised to get better. How do you invest in this environment? And a lot of people might say, why should anybody invest in Europe to begin with at this point?
Well, if you look at the deal flow, and let me go country by country, the UK, we have not seen a strong pipeline the last 6 to 9 months. That has come to an end. Deal flow is very good. And the UK market is offering good opportunities. It's obviously a very overfished pond. There are a lot of competitors, but the deals which we have done there, and particularly the primary deals, have done extraordinarily well. And so we have strengthened our effort in the UK, and that is, to me, a very interesting market. Germany, it's slightly different. The market itself was very slow. It's a little bit overpromised that you were seeing a lot of deal flow coming out of the German Mittelstand. We haven't really seen it over the last 20 years, and I don't think it's going to materialize. Deal flow has become better in the last 6 months. The economy is clearly doing much better than in many of the other European economies, even though it's stagnating at that point. Spain, to me, is a very interesting market. The market is craving for equity, and you do see many players who want to have very desperately equity. You have to be very, very cautious, and I think the challenge for us is to be cautioned and wait to see the best opportunities there to materialize. France, to me, in a moment, it's a big question mark. It used to be a very strong market. We do see deal flow there. But to me, France is at that point a question mark for investors. And to Italy, I would refer to Marco.
Well, Italy, I think it is a country where clearly the sovereign debt issue is probably the most important. I think the country has a couple of sectors that have demonstrated the ability for those companies to compete on the international market. You can think of the fashion world, the design world, some of the mechanical area, and those are the type of companies we look there. I would say, to complement what Gregor said, that in those markets, Spain and Italy, we would look at companies with strong export potential. And the type of transactions that we are looking at is to identify those mid-sized companies. And the reason for this is probably easier to make a difference than on very large companies. Companies that have a strength. It could be a product, a technology, a brand that we can leverage. We can support management to really expedite their international growth. And clearly leveraging on the Carlyle global network, this is something of significant help.
We have left one market unmentioned. That's the Nordic market. The Nordic market obviously is the flavor of the month. It's a very competitive market with in the past good returns, but prices have spiked. If I look back now, 20 years ago, and you remember what was happening in Sweden, you were seeing that many of the banks were almost bust. Government needed to bail them out, or many of them. The economy was not doing well. They underwent a period of great transition, and look where they are today. It's very prosperous. I'm not sure whether it's a justified comparison, but looking at Spain, many of the issues and symptoms Spain is suffering from were the same as Sweden was suffering from the beginning of the 90s. I'm not sure whether Spain will be in 10 years or 15 years as good of a market as Sweden, but many of the necessary steps have been taken by the government, and clearly the body language of the entrepreneurs, but also of the investors have improved a lot in Spain.
Asset prices. Do you see asset prices as high, low, about right? Are you a buyer or a seller at this point?
I would say that, you know, I do not know if we reach the trough. I don't think that anyone can aim at buying at the trough. But I think that a lot of bad news had already been priced in. There has been a lot of capital that left Europe, and I think that has reflected on prices. If I look at relative valuations versus other parts of the world, I do think that from a pricing point of view, relative to other parts of the world, Europe today is particularly more attractive than some of the other parts. And I think that there is one element that I do believe is, how can I say, a mispricing by the market. The percentage of business that companies outside of Asia are doing on the back of the big Asian infrastructure products, for example, infrastructure projects, is much greater in Europe than it is in the U.S. I mean, Siemens has been the biggest beneficiary of the big projects in Asia. And so some of the European companies actually do have significant exposure to Asia growth without having to pay Asian growth prices. So in that sense, I do believe that from an investment standpoint, today is probably one of the most attractive period of time.
Now, in the United States, the credit markets are as permissive as they've ever been. Debt is incredibly cheap and plentiful. What are you seeing in Europe?
I think in Europe we see for the large companies very similar trends. Sometimes it seems that what people say that the financial market have short memory is true. We have seen in a couple of recent transactions something we hadn't seen in a long time, i.e. we were offered significantly more leverage than we were willing to take, which we hadn't seen in a number of years. I think in Europe, however, contrary to the U.S., you have a polarized market. If you are a large company, even better if you have a substantial U.S. business and you can tap the U.S. market, if you can access the capital market with bond, I think you have very similar to what you see here in the U.S., extremely benign debt market. We have done a couple of transactions in the second half of last year to that end. I think if you have a smaller deals, which very often is our target on the continent, very often those companies are unable to tap the bond market for two reasons primarily. One of size, even though things are improving on that front, but also in terms of governance, reporting system, those companies are not ready to tap the market. This is something that we work with those companies to make sure that they become ready going forward. And therefore, you have to rely on the traditional banks. Traditional banks that for smaller deals are effectively the local banks in each country. And there it's much more difficult. There is today a real credit crunch going on in Europe. especially for the smaller companies. And I do think that this is another area where we do have a competitive advantage because our name, our brand, our relationship with, I would say, all, if not most of the financial institutions, sometimes is something that helps us on a competitive way to arrange financing.
So, Marco, you talk a little bit more about what you look for in companies, not just in Italy, but across Europe. What type of opportunities do you think are the most attractive right now, and what are the characteristics of the investments that you think are attractive?
Well, it's clearly always very hard to generalize because each investment is a story in its own, but I would describe the investment we do as transformational investments. We tend to focus on those situations where we have a clear view of what we could do different in those companies and with whom. Very often this comes about with a change in the management team. Very often to change things, you need some sort of discontinuity to the top management. And therefore, we really look at companies that when by the time we sell them, they're a different animal than when we acquire them, and hopefully for the better. Now, that also means that in some cases, we encounter exceptional companies, very good companies, but we think they're doing everything right. And I think that the challenge for us is that a good company is not necessarily a good investment. And in order to get good investment, I think you have to form a view on what you could do different. And I think in this, the fact of having our local presence, we are present with 5 offices in each one of the key economies in Europe, with local people on the ground. I think we have built, over the 15 years we've been there, a very good reputation, and we are very respected counterpart in those discussions. We can draw within Carlyle in terms of industry expertise to a pool of talent and resources, which is probably unparalleled in our industry. And therefore, what we're really focusing on are those companies with whom we can make a difference and we can help.
Well, thank you very much. This has been a great discussion. Thank you for joining us today on ValueCast.
Thank you for joining us. For more information, go to our website at carlyle.com. This has been a Carlyle ValueCast podcast.